Welcome to episode 34 of Near Death Dolls. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Paige.
And we're your hosties with the mosties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other submerged shit.
Okay. Like a submarine sandwich.
maybe not quite that, but sure, yeah, go for it, Paige.
Those are good. Thank you for joining us today. Lisa will be recounting the Chappaquiddick incident.
Oh, it's a toughie. But we're going to get through it with the help of some hooch. Paige, what are you drinking?
Woohoo! Got some good hooch. Today, I'm drinking a margarita. Again, I do like my margaritas.
Margaritas!
Oh, sexy.
I like to roll my R's, if you know what I mean.
Heck yeah, you can. I can't. So that's my hooch of the day. A nice tequila-heavy margarita.
Were you heavy-handed with your pour?
Yes. Yes, I was. And it was delicious.
Can I ask you a weird question?
Please.
Okay, so you live in California where you can buy hard liquor in the grocery store, right?
Yes. Y'all. Okay.
So in my grocery stores, you can buy wine and beer and that kind of stuff, nothing hard. And I'm wondering, do you guys have mixed cocktails in like cans or pre-mixed with hard liquor? Because I mean, we can get margarita mix in the store, but we can't get the tequila. Mm-hmm. So can you buy a full-on margarita pre-made in the grocery store?
Yeah, I bought one in a bottle called the Skinny Margarita. It was really good. I don't know if you remember. And then they also sell them in cans. They sell, yeah, it's barely worth it to go to the liquor store. You can find whatever you want at CVS.
Oh, man, that's nuts.
Yes, it is.
In Texas, you just can't do that. So that's interesting.
That's where I found some Buzz Balls was in CVS. I was like, ooh.
Well, our Buzz Balls, because they're made of orange wine, you can buy them at the grocery store. So.
Oh, okay.
So you can get those anywhere. So, but yeah, anything of tequila, vodka, rum, like you can't get that in a grocery store. But so I just was wondering if you can buy like the pre-mixed booze drinks in the grocery store. So that's cool to know.
This is my first time that I haven't just used that. I actually have tequila and a margarita mix that I'm mixing together. I'm not as lazy as I once was.
Lies. No, I'm just kidding.
You're so right. Well, that's my hooch. What are you drinking today, Lisa?
Well, before we started recording, I cracked open mine and she's like, do I hear lactose? And I'm like, wouldn't you like to know?
I would. And
I told her she'd be sadly disappointed because I'm just drinking a black cherry Truly.
Oh, no, I am not disappointed. I fucking love a Truly.
Well, let me just tell you, this whole weekend, I've had my brother-in-law and my father-in-law in town, and they're big beer drinkers, so we went to two breweries. Yeah, that's it.
Woo!
I can't remember. I was drunk. So, so I've been drinking a lot of beer. So I'm happy on this nice Sunday evening that we are recording to just have a Truly.
I do love a Truly.
It was a lot of German beer, so it's a little heavier in my opinion. So I'm glad to have a light Truly.
I've never had a German beer, but I assume it's like a Guinness, right? Like real thick.
It depends on the type. I mean, there's different types, but you can get like lighter, you know, German
like the
beers.
More golden colored ones.
You can. And I mean, they come in all ranges of colors. I'm not well educated on German beers, but...
Me neither.
But I enjoyed a couple, so...
That sounds nice.
Yeah, it was a very nice time. Good time. Yeah.
I've been working all weekend. I don't know.
So you desperately needed this margarita.
Oh, my God, yes. I was coming home from work at 3:30 on the freeway, like, get the fuck out of my way. I got a margarita at home. And then I got home and I was like, oh, shit, I got a couple hours. I better not start yet.
Girl, you start whenever you want. You do what your heart tells you.
I waited. I didn't want to be like totally sloshed on the episode.
Well, I mean, I'm the one doing the talking, so you can get as sloshed as you want. That's how I see it. Whenever it's your turn to tell the story, I'm like, shit, I'm starting early. I ain't got to talk.
You do a great job. I don't want to get like sloshed and start interrupting with like random things and going down rabbit holes and stuff.
Well, rabbit holes abound in lots of our episodes. So
the Chappaquiddick. Okay, let's do it.
So obviously Paige is a Harry Potter fan. It's Chappaquiddick.
You're right.
With a K. not Chepa Quidditch. But that sounds fun.
It does sound fun. Yes, I'm sorry. It is Chepa Quidditch. I was being a dick. Like Chepa Quidditch.
Yes, you're being a Chepa Quidditch.
What is Chepa Quidditch, Lisa? Let's get going. I want to know. I don't know anything about this.
Well, I'm really excited. So I'm going to give you a nice little intro that I wrote here. Okay, so the morning of Saturday, July 19th, 1969, two young men who had just come back from fishing look off into the water near Dyke Bridge and see a car partially submerged in Poocha Pond. The men run to a nearby house to call the police. The police chief of Edgartown, Dominic Jim Arena, and John Farrar, a diver, arrive at the site. When the diver goes down to check if anyone is in the car, he discovers a lone woman trapped inside. She's deceased. Apparently drowned.
Because she's in the pooch.
Poocha Pond, Poocha. Yes.
Poocha, that's it. Okay, thank you.
When they check who the car was registered to, they discovered it belonged to Senator Edward Ted Kennedy. But if Ted wasn't in the car, where was he? And what happened that ended the life of 28-year-old Mary Jo Kopechne?
Oh, wait. Okay. I still don't know anything about this, except now you say Robert Kennedy and Mary Jo Kopechne.
I'm saying Edward Ted Kennedy. Edward, you Ted might know Kennedy. Him as Ted. Yes. So his real name's Edward. He goes by Ted. That's his like nickname and what everyone calls him.
Ah,
Ted Kennedy.
Okay.
So Edward Moore Kennedy, a.k.a. Ted or Teddy, was born February 22nd, 1932 in Boston, Massachusetts, and was the youngest of the Kennedy children born to Joseph Kennedy Sr. and Rose Kennedy.
Youngest.
He was the youngest. And according to biography.com, unlike his siblings, who you may know, JFK, Robert, Bobby Kennedy. So unlike them, he wasn't into his academics as much as he was like sports and kind of being the jokester of the Kennedy clan.
Oh, he was the jokester. Of course he's the youngest.
And apparently because he was the youngest, there was less pressure on him to be as successful as his older siblings, right?
That's how I feel.
But as the years went on, he was trying to make a political career for himself. What's known now as the Kennedy curse had fallen upon his family. His eldest brother, Joe Jr., died in a plane accident. His sister, Kathleen, died in a plane crash. President John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Damn, okay.
His brother, Robert, or Bobby, was running for president, and he was assassinated. His sister, Rose Marie, or she's actually called Rosemary a lot more, but she had undergone a botched lobotomy and was institutionalized. Oh, gosh, that's going to be a whole nother episode. Episode.
I need to hear that story later. That sounds interesting.
That's a very interesting one. But even Ted himself was in a plane crash, but he surprisingly survived. However, two others on the plane didn't.
So that's two siblings died of plane crashes already. That's crazy.
Yes, Joe Jr. and Kathleen. Plus, I don't know if you know this, I'm pretty sure that JFK's son died in a plane crash.
Yeah, I believe you're right. JFK Jr. Mm-hmm. I kind of remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that too, yeah. So it's said that after the crash, Bobby Kennedy, who was still alive at this point, said, "Someone up there doesn't like us." And how sad is that?
It is really sad, and it's sort of true, because, oh my God, that is really bad luck. Or the curse.
It kind of is. One episode, probably a little while from now, but I do want to cover the Kennedy curse because there's so much crap.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Lisa's going to go down a Kennedy rabbit hole. I'm down. I'm going down with you.
So before Robert Kennedy's assassination, he was running for president following the assassination of his older brother, John, or they called him Jack a lot. So you have over here, you have Ted, whose real name is Edward. He goes by Ted. Then they got John, who's really called Jack. So
yeah, lots of strange nicknames, but
yeah, I don't always know how they, I mean, why didn't they call him Johnny,
right? Or just John, like
or Edward Eddie, like, right. But he Ed. Went by Ted Ed. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that was Theodore, but whatever.
Yeah, same. Anyway, so one of his secretarial staff was Mary Jo Kopechne, and I want to talk about her a little bit because I always feel like the victims are overshadowed by whoever's more famous, right?
Oh my God, yeah. They don't ever say anything about her.
I mean, when it comes to the victims, yeah. In general. So she was born in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania on July 26, 1940. Her father was an insurance salesman and her mother was a homemaker, and they were of Polish heritage. I believe they actually used to pronounce their last name Kopechny, but I think as they came here, they just went with Kopechny.
Mm-hmm. They Americanized it a little bit. Okay.
Maybe, yeah. She actually grew up in New Jersey and got a degree in business administration from Caldwell College for Women in 1962.
Good for her.
Oh, this girl. She decided to go to Montgomery, Alabama following graduation to teach at a school. And she chose Alabama specifically so she could help with the civil rights movement.
Oh my God, good for her. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. A former student said this of Mary Jo. She was by nature a fearless, driven, and focused young woman, passionate for social justice and making a difference.
Damn, Mary
Jo. I know, right? And everything that I read about her... And I'll talk about this later, but in general, people just come to say, oh, she was just this pretty blonde girl that something bad happened to.
Oh, my God.
The more I read about her, the more, like, I admired her. And I'll talk a little bit about that more a little bit later. But in 1963, Mary Jo went to Washington, D.C. and began helping with the senatorial campaign of Robert Kennedy and subsequently his presidential campaign. So she's very into politics.
Yeah, more than I would ever be, damn.
Yeah, same. She became a part of a group known as the Boiler Room Girls. And that sounds very like a Freddy Krueger groupie, but it actually refers to a hot windowless office this group of women worked in at the campaign headquarters.
So. Oh, boiler room. I get it. Okay. So,
they called it that just because it was like hot and stuffy and no windows and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No breeze coming through. That sucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like they say, behind every great man, there's a team of women sweating their asses off to make him look good.
In the boiler room.
Just kidding. Just kidding, but seriously. But Mary Jo specifically worked to gather information to see how the Democratic delegates from Pennsylvania had planned to vote in the election.
Okay. Okay. So she's polling.
She actually does a lot more than I'm stating. Mm-hmm. I didn't write it all down, but there was a lot of things she had to do, and it wasn't just she was someone's secretary. Like, I think a lot of people just called her, like, a blonde secretary that was pretty and died. And that's absolutely not what she was about. No, not at all. I think this woman was...
Very admirable. Like...
Very admirable. Yeah. I was going with those same words.
Yeah.
I'll throw some more information at us later about her, but... Okay. Following the assassination of Robert Kennedy, it's said by her parents that she was... heartbroken. Like, so do you remember that the speech that JFK said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country?
Yeah.
People said that really, really resonated within her, and that's why she was very, like, pro-civil rights movement. Wow. She was very...
Politically driven.
Politically driven, but she believed so vehemently in, especially Robert Kennedy, like Bobby Kennedy, and saw him as a visionary. And this group of women... I hate to say they, like, idolized and were kind of cultish about him.
Oh.
But as I, not in a bad way, and, like, I believe in this person so wholeheartedly, like, this is our, like, God's mission for us, is to support this person to make the world a better place.
Oh my God. That's so admirable that they would dedicate themselves like that.
Like, crazy. Like, crazy. In a good way. Like, in a very driven way, in a way that I wish I... were as passionate about something.
I know, me too.
Don't get me wrong. Thinking. I love our podcast and I'm very passionate about it. But this is like, this woman's like living, eating, breathing for this cause that she believed in and this person she believed in.
Yeah, enough to even probably much more than this, but like as simple as just sitting in a really hot, you know, no window room. Just to keep going, just to keep doing it, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm sure a lot of people were like, fuck that.
It's not within me to do that for anybody else, really.
Me and you, yes, but yeah, nobody else.
Yeah, no, no. She thought about leaving the world of politics, but she knew she was still passionate about it. And soon it was thought that Ted Kennedy would be running for president of the USA.
Okay, so she's like, well, we don't have Bobby anymore. What's the next best option?
Yes, but not as quickly. At this point, he was still just a senator. He wasn't running for president at this point. Mm-hmm. She definitely was wondering if she had it in her for another go at working a campaign.
Yeah, sounds like thankless work.
It does definitely sound like thankless work until you win.
Yeah, if you win.
So on July 18th, 1969, Ted, his cousin and probably closest confidant, whose name was Joe Gargan, and a few others were participating in the 43rd annual Edgartown Regatta. And if you don't know what a regatta is, it's essentially yacht racing.
Oh, yeah. I did not know what that was. Yacht racing, mm-hmm. rich
it
people.
It is. It is. You're right. right. Now, this Edgartown is like Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. So,
okay.
Very, I don't want to say bougie. Ritzy. But something like that.
Okay. They got money and they got yachts. And they race.
They got money and yachts. Let's there you go. There you go. And for the longest time, I always thought Martha's Vineyard was owned by Martha Stewart. She's an idiot. And it just made
me
sense.
Me too.
She definitely seems like she would live in Martha's Vineyard.
Yes, me too. I was like, oh, she must have like bought up a bunch of land and sold it off to all her rich friends or something. That's what I thought.
Okay. It's not just me.
No,
okay.
It's not just you.
Okay. So for the regatta, Ted's yacht came in ninth in the race. That sucks.
That sucks, yeah.
While there, he and his cousin Joe hosted a little get-together with the women known as the Boiler Room Girls, as well as a lawyer slash friend, Paul Markham, and about three other men on the island of Chappaquiddick.
Oh, that's where this comes in. Chappaquiddick. Okay.
Yes, it's a little island. And depending on who you ask, there may or may not have been boozy booze involved. And if you ask me, I'm sure there was, because no good time ever started with a salad, right?
You can't win friends with salad, so you're right.
Yeah. You're not going to relax with a salad.
Oh, fuck no. No. Mm-mm. That is my Monday, I'm upset lunch.
That's I'm back on track after a weekend of eating terribly and yes, getting drunk.
Exactly.
It's actually noted in the book Before Chappaquiddick, The Untold Story of Mary Jo Kopechne and the Kennedy Brothers by William C. Cassatus that Ted had a part-time chauffeur who went and purchased a few half gallons of vodka, some scotch, rum, and beer 2 days before the party.
It's just a Friday night.
I think it's a Saturday, but yeah. Also, the chauffeur was present at the party.
Oh, okay. So he's like, this is the stuff I like. I don't know what you guys brought.
What did you guys get? Okay. So definitely there was alcohol involved. Sometimes people say, no, there wasn't. Nobody was drunk or nobody really drank much. And I'm like, yeah, right. Okay.
He purchased a lot for them just to have a sip.
Yeah. I'm like, there was like 12 people there. I mean, that's still a lot of vodka.
Yeah.
So it's worth noting, most, if not all, of the Boiler Room Girls were single and in their 20s. Ted was married, and his wife, not present this evening, was pregnant and on bed rest.
Oh, I feel bad for her.
Yeah. All of the men in attendance at the party were married except for the chauffeur, and I believe he was, like, in his 60s.
Okay. He's not an eligible bachelor.
Probs not. He kind of sounded like a cranky puss. Every time I read stuff about him, he kind of sounded like a cranky puss.
Nobody wants him. Okay, I get it.
All of the women were single, unmarried, and none of them were over 30 years old.
Oh, so it's like they invited them there to be icebreakers or something.
Well, the way it was described was it was more or less of a kind of a reunion party because the Boiler Room Girls have kind of gone their separate ways after the assassination of Robert Kennedy. And some of the men there, I think, worked on his campaign. So it's all people they knew. They were just doing a little get-together.
Yeah, a little reunion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like they just went and like single-handedly picked out a whole bunch of like chicks to come to a party. It was girls that all knew each other, and they knew most of the men. So.
Okay, it sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Now, this sounds a bit scandalous, like I said, but according to Time magazine, none of the women were attractive enough to catch the eye or the wandering eyes of married men.
What the
fuck?
I'm
like, damn, burn.
Burn.
That's harsh, right?
I know, right? Poor girls, damn.
And you know what? People are going to act inappropriately if they are that kind of person deep down, attractive or not. Plus, when you get alcohol involved, all kinds of bad decisions will be made.
Right. And who's to say who's attractive to what person? People are attracted to different body types. So
body types, faces, personalities, yeah. Everything. Yeah, but totally. I was like, geez, Time magazine.
I know,
way to
man.
Be a, like an ass.
I know. Buzzkill, damn. All the girls were super ugly.
They said they just weren't that attractive that they would catch the eyes of these married men. I'm like, just fuck off.
I know, right? That's just some bullshit.
At around 11 p.m., real reasons unknown, Ted and Mary Jo leave the party. So Ted later says that Mary Jo wasn't feeling well from spending the day in the sun at the beach, so he offered to give her a ride back to the ferry, which would soon be shutting down for the evening at midnight, and get her back to her hotel on the mainland.
Okay, so he's being a good guy.
It's noted Mary Jo left without her purse or keys. Ted asked his chauffeur for the keys, and the chauffeur offered to drive them, but Ted said it was his car and he wanted to drive.
Ooh, has he been, like, you know, hitting the sauce? A little bit, anyway.
Sure. Okay. The chauffeur claims this was about 11:15 p.m. So, apparently, like, they all got a late start there anyway. I think they didn't start eating until, like, maybe after 10.
Oh,
they
okay.
They were doing, like, a little cookout.
You're right. That's nothing. That's nothing. I thought they had, like, started at 5 or 6 p.m. drinking.
No.
Okay.
No. Ted's cousin, Joe Gargan, that was there, he was in charge of, like, the food. And I think they mentioned that he only had, like, a little grill that could only grill, like, 2 steaks at a time. And there's, like, 12 people. So, like, it was taking some time to get dinner going. Anyways, chauffeur claims Ted leaves around 11:15 p.m. So, Ted and Mary Jo drive to a 3-way intersection and stop. It's like a T, okay?
Okay. 3-way. Yes.
A 3-way. Mm-hmm. Giggity. Anyways, and this is confirmed by an off-duty police officer who saw the car and kind of went to check on it because they were stopped. He kind of assumed they were either lost or having car trouble. The officer didn't get a good look at who it was, but he said he could make out a man driving and a woman in the passenger seat.
Could be anybody. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. He mentions that the car sped off rather quickly as he approached it around 12:40 a.m.-ish.
Whoa.
12:40. Okay. When the car was at the 3-way intersection, it went right down a gravel road. That was the wrong way to the ferry. They should have gone left down the paved road to get to the ferry. So let me go ahead and tell you now, direction and timeline are very important in this story.
Okay, so they went the wrong way. It's mm-hmm. about 12:40.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember what time I said that the ferry stopped running at?
12.
Yes.
Yeah, it's past time.
And you remember what time-ish that they left?
Yeah, it was like 11:30, right?
Like 11:15-ish, right?
11:15. So it's taken them a while to get to this point.
Okay. So let me tell you what everyone says from the cottage they were staying at, like having the party at, to get to the ferry. They said it shouldn't have taken more than maybe 10 minutes max.
Okay.
It's not a long drive.
And it's late at night. There is no traffic, I'm sure.
No, not getting to this little island. No. Okay, so as I move forward, a majority of the information I have comes from Ted, as well as a couple other people. I'm just kind of mushing it all together, and then I'll break it apart a little bit more. But let's also just say that we can't get Mary Jo's story. Yeah. We know at this point she's already passed away.
We do, unfortunately.
Okay, so Ted said he mistakenly turned down the road going the wrong way, stating he was unfamiliar with the area. He said he wasn't going more than 20 miles an hour and didn't see the bridge in the darkness and went over the side.
What?
It's also worth saying this bridge is kind of narrow and has no guardrails. It kind of just has like a foot, maybe tall, kind of like edging.
Not and enough.
No. Okay. No guardrails, kind of narrow. So the car plummeted into the water and laid upside down.
Hmm.
So Ted was able to escape the car, though he doesn't know how. What? He said he tried 7 or 8 times to dive down to save Mary Jo before he succumbed to exhaustion and perhaps shock.
I mean, yeah, that's true. It would be shocking.
Yes. Well, I gotta clean my glasses. I'm an old lady.
That's okay.
My glasses are getting fogged up with the bullshit.
Okay. The Chappaquiddick bullshit?
Pretty much. So, he returned to the cottage where the party was being held and He got his cousin Joe and Paul Markham to return to the accident scene where they tried to rescue Mary Jo but were unsuccessful.
Mm, she's already dead.
They just couldn't get her out. Let's just say that, okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay. So both men urged Ted to call the police and report the accident, and Ted said he would, but he needed to get back to his hotel on the mainland. He asked Joe and Paul, who I feel like we need to kind of call like Joey and Paulie, but I don't think they're Italian. I think they might be more Irish. I don't know. But he asked the men to handle the people at the party, and he said he'll contact the police and let them know what happened. So Ted, since the last ferry off the island was long gone, jumps into the water and swims back, which is approximately... Okay, so at first I'm like, holy crap, like how far can you swim? But approximately 500 feet or like a tenth of a mile. So it's really not that far.
I guess.
But it's far enough, in my opinion.
I think that's not the first thing I would think of. It's like, okay, I'm going to just swim over there.
Exactly. And we're going to talk more about other stuff. Okay. 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 Got it, Paige? Got it?
I think so.
Good. So, he swims back. He returns to his hotel room and changes into dry clothes, steps out of his room and sees a hotel worker outside, and the hotel worker said it was around like 2:25 a.m.
What?
Ted mentions to the hotel worker, who's also sometimes called the manager, I'm not sure if he was the manager or not, but says something kind of like, yeah, I can't sleep. There's some like noise outside my room.
Huh.
Yeah. And then he goes back to his room.
What the fuck? What about the dead person in your fucking car?
We're getting to it, Paige. We're getting to it.
Okay.
So the following morning, Ted sat down to breakfast with some friends at 7:30 a.m. One friend, acquaintance person, his name is Ross Richards, said Ted appeared to be fairly calm and didn't notice anything strange in his behavior. Richards even notes that Ted looked pretty well rested and cleaned up.
What?
Shortly after that, Joe and Paul show up looking for Ted and find him with Ross Richards, you know, having breakfast. And he said that Joe and Paul looked like they hadn't slept, looked a bit disheveled even.
Okay. Wow.
Like, yeah. So Joe asked to speak with Ted privately. Mm-hmm. When Joe didn't see any emergency responders over the course of the early morning hours, he knew that Ted didn't report it. So now they're having the conversation, and Joe and Paul, both being lawyers, tell Ted he has to report this ASAP.
Fuck right? Yeah, of course. He should have done it last night.
So as the men are discussing this, they see a tow truck headed for the ferry, and they know that the car has been discovered. Like, they're like, it clicked. I know there's only one reason why a tow truck would be heading that way, and this is why.
Okay. So somebody found it, which we know of.
Yes. After that, he goes to the Edgartown police station, where he waits for the sheriff to arrive. Now, Sheriff Arena is dealing with the scene of the accident. He's already over there, and he hears that Ted is back at his office. So, when Sheriff Arena gets back to his office, Ted is sitting in the sheriff's chair, like, using his phone.
Wait, am I in the wrong office?
Yeah, he's like, okay, I kind of feel like he's pulling rank here a little bit. But anyways, Ted had made a written statement for him, as you should. And let me read you what the written statement says, okay?
Okay.
It's not terribly long. So, this is what his written statement says. On July 18th, 1969, at approximately 11:15 p.m. in Chappaquiddick, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, I was driving my car on Main Street on my way to the ferry back to Edgartown. I was unfamiliar with the road and turned right onto Dyke Road instead of bearing hard left on Main Street. After proceeding for approximately 1/2 mile on Dyke Road, I descended a hill and came upon a narrow bridge. The car went over the side of the bridge. There was one passenger with me, one Miss Mary, and they leave it blank because they said Kennedy didn't know how to spell the last name.
Fair. That's fair.
So he just put one Miss Mary. A former secretary of my brother, Senator Robert Kennedy. The car turned over and sank into the water and landed with the roof resting on the bottom. I attempted to open the door and the window of the car, but have no recollection of how I got out of the car. I came to the surface and then repeatedly dove down to the car in an attempt to see if the passenger was still in the car. I was unsuccessful in the attempt. I was exhausted and in a state of shock. I recall walking back to where my friends were eating. There was a car parked in front of the cottage, and I climbed into the back seat. I then asked for someone to bring me back to Edgartown. I remember walking around for a period of time and then going back to my hotel room. When I fully realized what had happened this morning, I immediately contacted the police.
This is super sus, Ted.
Yeah, think?
Jesus fucking Christ. I'm like, hold on. Didn't you swim back? I don't remember you walking back to your house first and getting a ride. Come on now.
Yeah. So Ted also, I'm shaking my head, personally called Mary Jo's mother, Gwen, to tell her that her daughter was involved in an accident and had died.
Jesus Christ. He didn't do any of this shit.
No, he did call.
Oh, later. Okay.
Yeah. I'm done with the statement. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
He said, the end of his statement was, I immediately contacted the police.
Which he did.
End of statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he contacted them in the morning, I guess.
I guess he did.
Kind of.
That's true.
Ted also personally called Mary Jo's mother, Gwen, to tell her that her daughter had been involved in an accident and had died. Naturally, her mother was beyond devastated and in shock hearing that her only child had passed away.
Yeah, that's really sad.
So in a later interview with Mary Jo's mom, she said that before the accident, Mary Jo had called her and said she had some important things to tell her. One being that she accepted a job working for a political consultant. The second thing was that she was thinking of getting engaged to her boyfriend, whose name was Dick Tool. Insert jokes here.
Right?
And the third and final news, no one will ever know, I guess as Mary Jo was about to tell her mom, her dad got on the phone and she was saying she'd rather tell them in person the next time they saw each other. And we're going to speculate as to what her mom thought that was later. We'll get to that.
Okay. Okay. Her mom had some theories. All right.
Mm-hmm. So after meeting with the sheriff, Ted returned to what is referred to as the Kennedy compound, which is, for a lack of a better word, headquarters for the family home kind of thing.
It's a mansion, I assume.
I'm sure it's a mansion, yeah.
Everybody got their own wing of the house.
Dude, you joke, but when I used to go do massage, mm-hmm. I went to a house like in a very, very nice area of Houston, and they legit had wings of the house.
Jesus Christ. They're like, come to the West Wing and
exactly
room 208.
They weren't number coded, but there were wings.
Jesus Christ, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the people that had peacocks in their front yard.
They had peacocks? Aw.
They did. And a life-size mermaid bronze statue by their pool.
Oh my God. Okay, wow. Very nice house.
Yeah, I was like, do you guys have a son, maybe? Single? No, I'm just kidding. Right, yeah. So in the movie Chappaquiddick, which came out, I believe, in 2018, it shows Ted working with lawyers, fixers, advisors, and other team members who are going to try and make this go away as quietly as possible. But it's the Kennedys, and this is big news for the time, especially in the wake of Robert Kennedy's assassination, I think, 13 months earlier.
Oh, man, yeah, that is pretty soon after, enough to be like, and his secretary is now dead at the hand, or, you know, at the hands mm-hmm. of his brother, possibly.
Back at the scene of the accident, or incident, accident implies no one is at fault.
Yes.
rescue diver John Farrar is in the process of recovering Mary Jo's body. So Farrar describes the scene as the car is upside down, tires pointing to the sky, and Mary Jo is in the back seat area.
Back seat? Wow. Oh, maybe she climbed over. Maybe. I don't know.
No. I think when they did some kind of like test, they showed that when the car flipped and hit the water, it would have propelled her into the back seat.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So that happened naturally in the
occurrence. Right.
Unfortunately, but yes. She is technically upright in the upside down car. I don't know if this is going to make sense. And guys, I have a diagram picture that I found online that mm-hmm. describes how she is in the car. And I'm going to totally post that in our Instagram.
Okay, cool. So her head is up, basically. Her head is facing up.
So car is upside down. So think of the car upside down. Mm-hmm. She's in the back seat. Her head is where the floorboard area is in the back seat.
Sure.
Because that's where there would have been an air pocket.
Ah, so she, okay.
Okay, so to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. Her body, when they retrieved her, was already in the rigor mortis state, so she's stiff. Okay. And by the looks of it, when she died, she was holding herself where she could breathe into the air pocket.
Yeah, makes sense.
So when she was removed from the car, they noted that she was fully dressed. And this is a sad tidbit of info, but I found it really interesting. Hopefully this doesn't bother anybody, but when the diver said he was removing the body, he actually put a rope around her neck to essentially keep her from being swept away with the tide. And it's just kind of haunting, right?
It is. Yeah, that's upsetting.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, that's probably what you had to do to make sure she just didn't get swept away.
Yes. And she's already dead. You're not going to hurt her. But it's upsetting.
Right. I mean, it's still a little chilling to me. Anyways, once a cursory examination was underway, the mortician Eugene Frey, I think that's how you pronounce it, and John Farrar noted there wasn't much water in her, as there normally would be with a drowning victim. So they surmised she actually suffocated, not drowned.
Suffocated? That's very suspicious.
No, because if she has an air pocket and it's only so big, you're going to run out of oxygen.
I see what you mean. Okay.
But the medical examiner, Ronald Mills, determined that the cause of death was accidental drowning. But as it seemed, Mary Jo probably stayed alive in the car for at least an hour, maybe more, depending on which theory you believe. And if Ted had either knocked on a door of a house that was close by or called the authorities or the fire department, which was actually located on the way back to the cottage where he walked on the island, she might have been rescued. And the diver, John Farrar, said if he had been notified immediately, he could have gotten her out in about 25 minutes.
She would have been fine. She would have been fucking fine.
More or less, but she would have been alive.
She would have been alive. She would have been alive.
But Ted didn't try knocking on any of the houses nearby. He didn't call any kind of emergency services once he reached the cottage that the party was happening at. And I also have been listening to a podcast, and I'm so mad that I didn't discover it when I started researching. I only found it like 2 days ago, and I'm so angry because it's a very in-depth podcast called Cover Up. Mm-hmm. And it's actually by the people with Time Magazine.
Ah, okay.
I'm sorry, not Time. People. It's with the people from People. Ah, not Time.
People. Okay.
People Magazine. The people with People Magazine put it out. And the person doing all the research and hosting the podcast said that she interviewed some guy who lived on the island right near kind of where it happened. And he said he knew that on the way back, Ted Kennedy should have knocked on his house's door because he was only 4 years old, but he had to sleep with the light on in his bedroom because he was scared of the dark, mm-hmm. and his bedroom window faced the road. So Ted, at some point, kind of used the excuse, like, I didn't even notice houses there. There were no lights on. If he had truly been looking, the lights would have been on in that house. So keep that in mind. Okay. So when it came time for an autopsy, I've read that both Mary Jo's parents and the district attorney didn't call for one. One can assume the DA didn't because that would further prolong the investigation into the incident. But when mm-hmm. I found out why the Kopechnys didn't insist on one, I was pretty surprised. And they believe it ties into the last thing that Mary Jo was going to tell them before she died. Any guesses?
Pregnant?
Yes.
Very, what's it called?
Sus,
but like, yeah, definitely very sus, but also kind of like scandalous for the time.
Indeed. So Gwen Kopechne believed Mary Jo could have possibly been pregnant, and she didn't want it to come out that her good Catholic daughter was with child out of wedlock. Woo-hoo. And now it's not really as taboo today as it was back then, but Gwen Kopechne also said she regretted not pushing for the autopsy. She believed it might have revealed more about her last hours if they had done the autopsy. But then again, who's to say that the evidence would have been the truth? Because, yeah. I mean, hashtag cover-ups.
Exactly. Egg-fucking-exactly.
So, Mary Jo's funeral was held on July 22nd in Plymouth, Pennsylvania. Ted, his wife Joan, and the widow of Robert Kennedy were in attendance. One thing that's remembered by those who can actually remember this happening back then is that Ted wore a neck brace to the funeral. And here's the funny thing. I asked my father-in-law, who just came for the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I said, do you remember the Chappaquiddick incident? And he's like, I remember this and I remember this. And he said something, I believe, about the neck brace. And we're going to talk about that right now. So Ted Kennedy wore a neck brace to the funeral. But people weren't really buying it because up until that point, he didn't seem to need one. But all of a sudden now, And I know that strains and things can set in later after the initial, like, shock or whatever.
I have heard that. Yeah, they say, like, if the insurance company asks you the next day if your neck hurts, don't say no. Wait until the next day. You know, wait a couple days in to see if your neck starts hurting. But still, it's a little suspicious that he shows up to the funeral with a neck brace.
Well, yeah. I was also going to say, like, if you've ever been in a car accident, like, your muscles tense up and your adrenaline's going, so you don't always feel strains or stress like that, but you know, once you relax, you can start feeling where your muscles have been like tight and hurting and this or that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's widely thought that he did this to garner sympathy.
It does sound like that, like he's like, oh, see, it hurts me too. Ooh, ouch. Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Especially since people saw Ted craning his head around at the funeral, like looking behind him, and they're like, if he was in pain, he could not turn his head like that.
Mm-hmm. Right? He'd be like, ooh, ah, like turning very stiffly like a Frankenstein.
Yeah, absolutely. There was an inquest to determine if there should be a trial for this incident, if charges should be brought upon Ted. There were a lot of questions asked, but one thing I wanted to read from the transcript of the inquest is that Ted said in regards to why he didn't report the accident for 10 hours, the question was, did you have a conversation with Mr. Markham or Mr. Gargan, or both at that time? And can you give the court what that conversation was, referring to the morning after when they sought him out?
Interesting. Okay.
And here's his answer. Here's his answer. And I was like, come again? Just wait for it. Okay. Here's what he said. Well, they asked, had I reported the accident and why I hadn't reported the accident. And I told them about my own thoughts and feelings as I swam across that channel and how I always willed that Mary Jo still lived. How I was hopeful even as that night went on and as I almost tossed and turned, pacing that room and walked around the room that night, that somehow when they arrived in the morning that they were going to say that Mary Jo was still alive.
What the fuck? Sorry.
Hold your outburst, Paige.
I'm upset.
So he says, I told them how I somehow believed that when the sun came up and it was a new morning, that what had happened that night before would not have happened and did not happen, and how I couldn't gain the strength within me, the moral strength, to call Mrs. Kopechne at 2:00 in the morning and tell her that her daughter was dead.
He didn't have to fucking call her. All he had to do was call the fucking cops.
So basically, Ted's saying he didn't want to believe the truth, and that's why he didn't report it for 10 hours.
Sure, I guess, but I just, and plus in his official statement he said he hadn't swam back, he got a ride back.
Mm-hmm. Bizarre, right?
Sus.
In a 1988 interview with Joe Gargan, I believe it was by the Boston Globe, he stated that Ted had a plan where he wanted to say that Mary Jo had been driving alone and went off the bridge by herself. Hmm. And then to have Joe, quote unquote, discover the accident. That way Ted wouldn't be involved. But both Joe and Paul Markham, who were both lawyers, said that they weren't going to do that because not only is it morally wrong.
Oh, yeah.
As well as if anyone had seen their rescue efforts, because they both said that they went to try and help. If anyone had seen that three men were out there, they'd be screwed because it'd be known that they were aware of the accident much earlier, mm-hmm. and they'd be fucked in both their personal lives as well as their careers.
That makes sense, yeah, because they'd be caught in a lie.
Mm-hmm. So Ted ultimately pled guilty to misdemeanor of leaving the scene of an accident. He received a sentence of 2 months in prison, which was suspended, so he did not actually have to do it. And he lost his license for a year. Oh, also, totally forgot to say, his license was expired when he was driving, so there's that.
Drinking, driving, maybe drinking just a little by that point. I don't know. Drinking, driving, no license. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And after this whole ordeal, Joe Gargan became estranged from the Kennedy family, and I don't blame him like one fucking bit. No. He was like, you know what? Hands washed of this fucking situation, exactly. Of this family. And I'm out. I believe Joe, and this is their cousin. So Joe, I believe he lost both his parents at a very young age. So he was kind of like more or less adopted into the Kennedy family. I mean, he's still related to the Kennedys, but he
got raised by them because his parents died?
I'm not sure exactly if they raised him, but he was very, mm-hmm. very close. And he and Ted were very close in age. I think there's like a 2-year gap.
Oh, okay. So they were friends.
Yes, they were not only cousins, they were friends as well, like best friends. So a lot of times, not only was Joe Ted's friend and cousin, he was also kind of like, I'll handle this for you. He was kind of like his go-to gopher.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here to help. What do you need? Sure.
Exactly.
So he would usually step in and like handle these kind of situations, except in this one, he was like, wait, what?
I think he was like, there's a dead woman involved. Like, no, this is not happening.
Yeah.
So after this, Ted Kennedy aired a televised speech written by the famed JFK speechwriter Ted Sorensen, who also wrote the Ask Not What Your Country Can Do For You, But What You Can Do For Your Country speech. He wrote that.
Okay. Good speechwriter.
Ted Kennedy recounts the events, asks the public if they believe he should resign from his Senate position, and also, perhaps very smartly written, he states he wondered if some awful curse did hang over the Kennedy family. And it's smart because this will remind the public and perhaps garner sympathy for the assassination of his two older brothers, mm-hmm. as well as the airplane accident that killed, on separate occasions, his oldest brother and sister. Ultimately, Ted goes on to be the fourth longest to serve in the Senate from 1962 to 2009.
Whoa, shit. Okay.
He did try to win the Democratic Party nomination for the presidency of the United States in the 1980 presidential election, but was beat out by Jimmy Carter. And Ted Kennedy died of brain cancer in 2009.
Oh, he did. Wow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I didn't even know that part. Wow. So now we don't know what happened.
No one really knows. And I'm like, I think all these guys are dead.
So we're never going to know what actually happened that night. Mm-mm.
No, but I kind of wanted to... I think a lot of the tabloids at the time kind of implied that there was something not so savory about mm-hmm. their relationship. But it's funny, some people that were interviewed, like some of the other Boiler Room girls, kind of said like Mary Jo was not that close to Ted at all. Like, she was very much Bobby Kennedy's like
gal,
little champion. Not gal in the way of like inappropriosity.
Oh,
that's a word. Not in an inappropriate way, but like she was like a faithful like servant, like public servant in that way. Not a public servant, but servant to him.
She was dedicated to him, but there was nothing sexual going on.
Nothing sexual. And they're like, no, I don't really think Ted was always kind of the black sheep, kind of fuck up.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like Mary Jo was about him in any way. And he also says this as well. I mean, it definitely does look really bad that they were in this car together. And also the timeline was very weird. So I don't know what was really going on. But, I mean, hell, they could have just been talking about Bobby for all we know.
Yeah, and he wasn't paying attention and went over the side. Like, it could have been just as stupid as that.
Right, but in the movie, they didn't imply anything like, you know, any adultery was going on, any, like, canoodling or anything like that. But who really knows? Nobody knows. But I wanted to mention that Mary Jo's boyfriend, Dick Toole, said in the podcast cover-up that she was sweet, bubbly, but not ditzy, that she was incredibly smart, that they were both kind of reserved people, and I think she went as his date to some kind of function, and she insisted that she wouldn't stay in the same apartment as him, like in his apartment. Whoa. So she actually like slept the night with his landlady.
Whoa, weird.
Like she's like I'm very like
conservative.
Very conservative in that way. Like she's not, so that's, that kind of surprised me that they were saying that they were suspecting her of being pregnant.
Yeah, if she's that careful, like who cares at that point? She does, mm-hmm. clearly, so.
Right, but then again, it's so hard to tell the truth, because what if Mr. Dick Toole, I'm sorry, I can't say that, what if Mr. Toole was trying just to protect her reputation, and what if she had been pregnant, what if they had been sleeping together, and he's like, well, I don't want it going down in history that she was a slut, I mean, and look, I say that in a way, not that I judge her as a slut,
yeah,
because I would be super slutty.
Me too. We've had our fun. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had our fun, okay? It's different times. But I say that in the way that, like, I'm not judging. Let's just start there. Not true. Judging
yeah.
at all. But maybe he wanted to protect her reputation.
So he wanted to say that, and it might have been true for that one instance, but maybe they did have some hanky-panky.
Maybe they did. Maybe she was with someone else. But we'll never know because, like I said, there was no autopsy done.
Well, yeah, her mom said that she might have been pregnant, and that's why she didn't want an autopsy. So,
right. Maybe the parents were trying to protect her as well, but they definitely regretted it. The mom said she regretted not knowing what happened in those final hours for Mary Jo.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been good to know that. That might have helped figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think from everything I've heard and read, past the basic like newspaper saying, oh, blonde secretary passed away in the car, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And making her seem just like a footnote in history. I feel like a lot of times with these families, whether you're a celebrity, a politician, anybody with money, that people around you become expendable and collateral.
Right. Yeah. No matter how much they help. No matter how much work they do for you, mm-hmm. and suddenly it's like, I don't know the name of any sort of assistant to any celebrity right now. I can't pick one off the top of my head.
And they'll hardly ever go down in history as anything other than a footnote, maybe if you're that lucky. Like
if you're lucky, yeah.
If you're lucky, yeah. But
that's tough.
I think it's important to remember victims, and I definitely, like I said, the more I heard about Mary Jo, the more I was like, this woman deserves so much more. I mean, if her death had to happen, I feel like she should have been given, like, a freaking school. I mean, she purposely chose to go to Alabama to work in, I believe it was, like, low-income neighborhoods, schools that, you know, in the Black community, and she wanted to give back and wanted to fight for civil rights because she believed in it so much. And like I said, I don't think she gets the credit and the admiration she totally deserves.
Oh my God, totally. Yeah, because I didn't know any of that about her. All I knew was that she had something to do with the Kennedys and she's dead. You know what I'm saying? Like, they did not try to play her up at all. Like, she's this wonderful woman who dedicated her life. She didn't have to go work in Alabama. You know, she did that.
She wasn't from the area. She didn't, you know, she chose to go there. And I don't remember how long. I think she only taught for a year, but people just said, like, what a wonderful woman she was and how she was so passionate and how she was very rewarding. In the way of, like, if you did good, she was all about you and, like, boosting you up in your confidence.
That's wonderful. Yeah, so she's a good teacher. She's obviously a good civil servant or whatever, working for Bobby before he died.
Yeah. Oh, I totally forgot to mention also Bobby's widow.
She came to the funeral.
She came to the funeral, and she knew and trusted and admired Mary Jo so much. She actually offered to give her the position of governess to their kids.
Wow.
So, yeah, Robert Kennedy and I can't remember her name. I think it's Ethel, maybe. She approached Mary Jo and was like, I would love for you to teach my kids. Like, you know, be their private teacher. And she's like, you know, that's not where I belong. I belong in politics. Like, wow. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So she was actually close to even her. So I really don't think she was intimate with Bobby at all.
Yeah, not with Bobby, not with Ted, I'm thinking as well.
No, there was one interview where they were interviewing, like I said, one of the other Boiler Room girls, and they were like, yeah, no one was that close to Ted, no one liked Ted that much. Kind of vibe feel, you know what I mean?
Right, like, we all would talk about him behind his back kind of thing.
maybe not that, but they were like, just like, we weren't close to him. He wasn't the person that was on the right path. Everyone knew him as the jokester. He was the chubby kid. No one put a lot of stock into him. He actually got, I believe, expelled from Harvard for 2 years because he wasn't doing so well in his Spanish course, and he had someone take a test for him, and he got caught cheating and got kicked out for 2 years.
So, really, Ted?
Now, in the movie, and even in stories that I read regarding this, Joe Sr., the dad of the Kennedy children, had a stroke a while back, and he wasn't really talking much. He couldn't really talk. And he died 4 months after this incident, and they said that, I think Ted actually said he felt like he let down his father so much that his dad was just like, I'm so embarrassed. Like, you were disloyal to the family because you brought this shame upon us. And then he passed away. So Ted always kind of blamed himself for that.
So he feels guilty.
Very, very guilty. And then even Ted Kennedy's son was later interviewed saying he knew his dad was very upset and felt like he caused the passing of his dad. And he also said that when he was like 12 years old, he did ask his dad about Chappaquiddick, and his dad's like, we don't talk about this. Like, to talk about anything within the family is being disloyal, and you can't even talk to a therapist about it, because what if they turn around and go say something like, this stays in the family. No one goes outside the family. Otherwise, you're disloyal and you'll be, like, shunned.
Oh, my God. A 12-year-old boy. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. That, unfortunately, is the story of Chappaquiddick, the incident between Ted Kennedy and Mary Jo Kopechne that we will, unfortunately, never know the true, real answers behind timeline, motivation for things. Like, I don't know.
Right. I mean, like, what happened? There was so many missing hours that, you know, like you said, it should have taken 10 minutes and it took like an hour.
Mm-hmm. And guys, I'm going to put up a lot of pictures on our Instagram page. Is going to share it on our Twitter, but it's going to show you a map of the roads going left and right, where they should have gone and where they did go. I have a picture of how she was positioned in the car when they found her. have pictures, a couple of pictures of her. It's so sad. Like, I could only find, like, maybe three pictures of her that constantly showed up. One was, like, I don't know, maybe, like, a college or a high school senior photo. Mm-hmm. There's one of her talking to Robert Kennedy. And I believe there was, like, one more. There was, like, not a lot of pictures of her, and it's so sad. Because she was lovely. She, like, by all accounts, she was very lovely, and physically she was very pretty, so.
Physically she was very pretty, and then what'd you say? New York Times went and posted something that's like, all those girls were ugly.
That's kind of how it came across. They were just saying they weren't of unusual. They said they weren't of extraordinary beauty or anything like that, but I was like, just might as well call them ugly then, assholes.
Right,
like,
come on, especially they've been drinking all that fucking vodka.
Well, like I said, I think this was posted quite a long time ago, so there was a lot more chauvinism. Chauvinism in journalism.
Oh my God, true. Probably people reading it were like, oh yeah, I get it.
Yep. Different times.
Different times indeed.
Yes. So that's it, guys. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at Near Death Dolls Podcast. You can tweet us on the Twitter at Near Death Dolls and send us an email at neardeathdolls.com with your spooky, creepy, weird personal experience that you would like us to share in an upcoming Dear Dollies, aka Listener Story episode. Let us know if we can use your name or not, and if you have a social media you want us to shout out, we will definitely do that.
Fuck yeah. And if you like what you heard, let us know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also help us by taking a screenshot while you're listening to our episode and share on Instagram or Twitter. It's a simple, fast, and free way to support us. If you feel like joining in on the fun, come on over to the Dark Dolly side and join our Patreon for some delicious extras. And dearest doll faces, please be kind to each other. Until next time, bye-bye.
See y'all next time. Drive safe.
Ta-ta.
Thank you for coming.
Drive safe.
Couldn't help it.
Watch out for them bridges.
Fucking bridges.
And all that vodka.
Apparently, Ted Kennedy was drinking a lot of rum and cokes.
Rum and coke. At least he has good taste.
Does he, though? Okay, bye, guys.
Bye.
Special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.